You're listening to the Locked On Nuggets podcast, your daily podcast on the Denver Nuggets. Now, here is your host from DenverStiffs.com, Adam Mottis.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to the Locked On Nuggets podcast, part of the Locked On NBA Network. I'm your host, Adam Mottis from DenverStiffs.com, the largest Denver Nuggets blog and community on the web. Check us out. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. We've got all the videos from the locker room after the game on YouTube, and some good ones. I thought Michael Malone has been on fire with his comments, both at practice, pregame, postgame. I just feel like he's hitting the nail on the head with so many things, and just has a lot of good insights that I think a lot of things for writers, but also Nuggets fans just to sort of chew on. So take a look at that at our YouTube account and check out some of those videos. I think you'll like them. And this episode of the show is going to be on the win over the Atlanta Hawks. Nuggets back in the win column. Felt like it's been forever since they've gotten one. They got one in a big way this last game with, I don't even, do I have to do the math here? 45-point win over the Atlanta Hawks. Just an absolute dismantling of them. Impressive game from Denver. Look, I know that Atlanta is not good. They are just 3-12. They are one of the worst teams in the entire NBA. They were missing a couple of important players tonight, Torian Prince, John Collins. Nonetheless, doesn't matter. Denver came out. You know, if they would have won, you know, 110-100 or 115-100, something like that, I think you could look at this game and just say, all right, nothing to see here. They beat the second worst team in the entire NBA, big whoop. But, you know, and there's still some of that. Like, I'm not going to declare the Nuggets' ills are all gone. But this was a game where Denver scored 138 points. Before garbage time started, they, cleaning the glass, had their half-court offense as the single best game that had been played in the half-court on the season. So if you've listened to this show for long enough, you know that I think the Nuggets' half-court offense is a huge indicator of just how well they're in the groove, so to speak. This is a team that should be one of the two or three best half-court offensive teams in the NBA, you know, up there with a Golden State or a Houston, because they just have so much shooting, so much talent, and the brilliance of Nikola Jokic that they should be able to really light teams up when it gets into a half-court setting. Tonight they did that, and I think they did it for a couple of interesting reasons. I think there's a lot to get to in this one, so we'll dive right in. First off, the most important note, Monte Morris got the start tonight, and it was a surprise. Apparently, Jamal Murray was late to shoot around this morning. The team always shoots around the morning of a game. Not always, actually. Sometimes they cancel shoot around, but they always have the opportunity to do a shoot around. Usually, those run for 45 minutes to an hour. On game days, they're usually 10 o'clock, so they'll go from 10 to 11, roughly. And they're not really quite a full-on practice. It's not like they're doing, you know, drills or five-on-fives or anything like that, but they're going over the game plan. They're talking about which players to close out on at the three-point line, which ones to sag off of. They go over pick-and-roll coverage, personnel, stuff like that. So it's just kind of a last refresher. Sometimes they'll cancel that if they've, you know, been on the road, or if coach feels that they've been exhausted. Sometimes if they have a practice the day before, they won't do a shoot-around. But they had shoot-around this morning, and Jamal Murray apparently was late. Malone seemed to think it was not a very big deal. At least he played it down in the postgame, but it came as a surprise to a lot of people. And, you know, it's funny. Before the game, Michael Malone didn't comment on it. He asked, oh, is it going to be the same starting group? He said, yeah, same starters. So when the news came out that Jamal Murray would not be starting, you know, my first thought was, okay, some kind of team violation must have happened. But I thought maybe it happened between Malone's media availability at 5:15 and the game time at 7. I thought maybe Jamal did something, you know, in the locker room or said something, or, you know, something happened, because I thought Malone would just kind of come forward with that. Instead, he did not. And of course, Nuggets fans started to speculate, what could it possibly be? Is he in the doghouse? Is he getting demoted because of his play? Turns out it was none of that stuff. It was just this one game. But I like it. I actually like that this happened in a weird way. I wish it didn't happen because of a team rule. But, you know, it was neat to see Monte Morris run that first lineup. Because one of the stories of this game is that the Denver Nuggets got off to an incredibly hot start, 13-0, as a matter of fact, to open up this game. The ball was popping. I thought Nikola Jokic looked engaged, but more than anything, Nikola Jokic was getting the ball in his spots. The first two plays of the game, he gets it at sort of that block extended, you know, not quite on the low post, not quite the elbow, but somewhere just pushed out a little bit wide of the in between those two spots. And that's his spot to operate, because he's really good at knocking down that jumper, which is what he did. He knocked down two straight jumpers from that spot, but he's also good at backing people down from there or attacking their shoulder and getting around the and getting to the basket. So Monte Morris, I thought, just did a great job. He always does this. I mean, it's not like it was this game was special. He just always seems to get the ball where it's supposed to go and get it within the flow of the offense. But another sort of quick pregame note I want to bring up is that Michael Malone has been very short with the media this year. I mean grouchy. He's been kind of, he hasn't engaged with the media very much this year. And it started at training camp. I thought it was really weird. You know, typically, because we're around each other so much, that we as in the media, the players, the coaching staff, we're around each other so much, every day it feels like, quite often, that, you know, a little bit of just sort of interaction is always nice, because it's like, look, we're all here to do a job. I know nobody likes talking to the media and some of our idiotic questions that we always ask, and we ask the same questions and all this different stuff. I get why it's annoying. But when there's a weird, like, sort of just professional wall between any type of coworkers, it's always a bit weird. And that was one of my notes I had this year was, you know, Malone, for whatever reason, has been very distant from the media and has handled media scrums very sort of stoically with no personality or anything. Well, over the course of this losing streak that the Nuggets are on, Malone has sort of softened his stance, and he started to be a little bit more relaxed in the pressers, just kind of BS with the media. Not even a whole lot, not like he used to do, quite frankly, but still just a little bit more. It's been a little bit more lighthearted. Tonight he did not wear a tie, and I know this is kind of a silly thing. Malone, a very formal guy, I think very like into traditions or what have you. One of my theories, and this is just a theory, that through all of this tension, the Nuggets have had a weight on their shoulders, I think, over this entire season, but it's really become exponentially more noticeable during this losing streak and you know, Jokic not shooting the ball and people just not knowing what's going on. I feel like there's been a weight on this team, and part of me wonders if Malone, sensing this from his team, has tried to go the opposite direction and just lighten the mood. Not wearing a tie tonight, taking the press conferences, going into a four-game losing streak, but being relaxed. I wonder if he's just extra conscious about trying to make sure that the team is comfortable and not panicking and not starting to get into like overreaction mode. So just kind of an interesting note. And then the reason I bring that up right now is because there is... He also talked about how there was a concerted effort tonight for him to trust his team a little bit more, especially on the offensive end, and calling fewer plays. So, you know, we've heard this phrase before, most notably last year, January 22nd, a date we sort of cite a lot on this show. Malone talked about calling fewer plays then. Denver went on to rally off of a great month. I think it went like 7 of 9 or 9 of 11 in the month of February last year when Malone stopped calling so many plays. And Jokic himself nearly averaged a triple-double in that month. It just, you could tell he was in his element. Well, I think there were a lot of shades of that tonight. So I just want to set the table with that before we get into some of the details. So in this game, the ball started to get popping, and it's funny. One of the reasons I say Malone has been so on fire, you know, just with his comments, is I feel like, you know, a lot of fans often, and even writers, myself, this is something I've sort of learned. I'm in my fourth year covering the team, so I'm also learning a lot about this whole process and everything that goes into it as I go. I hopefully getting better with every podcast, every article, every game I cover. But you get into sometimes you wonder, like, does Malone know this? Oh, this lineup works. Do you think Malone knows that? I always think these coaches, they have a lot of information. It doesn't mean they don't have bad instincts sometimes or make bad calls. I think they make a lot of bad calls. And you know, I criticize a lot of the little decisions that they make. But, you know, this week I thought Malone has really sort of pointed out a lot of the things people question about, like, oh, do you think he realizes this flaw in the team or this or that? You know, he's pointed out a lot of those things and sort of dissected all the different angles for him. And one of them was that, you know, quite frankly, he just said, I need to trust this team more, which I think is a really big thing and a really tough thing for a coach to do, especially with a young team, especially with a turnover-prone team. I mean, you look at the Nuggets, the biggest indicator of their success on the offensive end is turnovers. When they do not turn the ball over, their offense is usually pretty good. When they do turn the ball over, it's pretty bad. So I think it's hard for a coach to trust a young team, but at the same time, the more trust you give, the better off they tend to be. So it's this weird sort of paradox where Malone knows he's got to trust them, even though it's probably going to give him an ulcer some nights when they just don't have it. Well, tonight they had it. The ball was popping, and I thought the team just got settled into a groove very early in this game, and they played in that same groove for the entirety of the game. This was a game where the Nuggets played, I thought, their best basketball for 48 minutes. Even though it was a bad opponent, they still sort of had a consistent effort and execution in the half court that was really, really nice. Vince Carter, it's funny, this was probably the last time. I don't think anybody saw this as a sentimental game for any reason. The crowd was not great tonight. It was kind of a quiet crowd, as to be expected. But this was probably the last time Vince Carter, a living legend, comes to the Pepsi Center. I was glad I got to be there for it. He knocked down a couple of threes. He almost got dunked on by Trey Lyles. That would have sent him right into a retirement. But it's kind of cool to some of these guys, Dirk Nowitzki, Vince Carter. It's kind of cool to see the farewell tour for these guys, so to speak. But Jokic, back to Jokic, he was just so engaged early on. And maybe part of this was, you know, I've sensed a bit of tension between Jokic and Jamal Murray. I don't want to overstate it because I don't think it's big. I don't think those guys dislike each other or anything like that. But just a little frustration on the court because those guys haven't seemed to be in sync. And I thought with Monte Morris starting, a guy who always gets everybody, it's not like he's in sync with Jokic. He's in sync with everybody. I thought Jokic wanted to go out and prove, like, hey, when we play the right way offensively, this is what we can do. So he was extra aggressive, I thought, throughout this game. Not aggressive as a scorer. He only took 11 shots. Did he get to the foul line? Let me see here. Yeah, he had 2 free throw attempts. So 12 points on 11 shots, not exactly like phenomenal one-on-one scoring, but he just orchestrated the whole show, especially in the second and third quarters. He just felt like he was the fulcrum of the offense, kind of like the days of old. He still gave that second foul for no reason, so he gets an early foul, just whatever, in the flow of the game. Then he gives an intentional foul that turned out to be a second foul, which, you know, it didn't end up affecting the game in any way, but it's one of those things where Jokic, this is where Jokic has to get better. I mean, mentally, the team needs him. A lot of people tell me, well, Malone's only playing him X amount of minutes. Well, some of these games he gets foul trouble early and has to come out. So he can help himself and help the team by just knocking these things out. It's weird that we're talking about this in year 4 now for Nikola Jokic because he's been doing it since he came into the league and he still continues to do it. One of the things I've talked about, maybe I think I'll probably write on this, do a short deep dive on Denver Stiffs. One of the things that I've talked about in the past is that the Nuggets, when they get the shortcut early, it opens up the offense for other guys. And when they run a very deliberate offense, I think that shortcut on the handoff kind of gets lost. So what I mean by shortcut, if you imagine Nuggets base offense sometimes, especially when they're running their sort of open offense, no play call offense, Jokic will often find himself initiating the offense, bringing the ball up court in transition or whatever, and you'll have 2 guys on the left, 2 guys on the right. Well, Jokic gets an option. He can choose either side, and whichever side he sort of addresses, meaning like looks at, dribbles toward, whatever, you know, that triggers a series of options. One guy on the wing, one guy in the corner. The guy on the wing has an option. He can either screen down for the guy for the corner, just set a pin down, get into that action. He can come and receive a dribble handoff himself from Nikola Jokic, or he can shortcut. And what I like about the shortcut is you sort of fake like you're going for the handoff and then you cut towards the basket. And even though that rarely opens up an immediate backdoor cut, sometimes it does, but even though it rarely does, what it does is it forces the defense to start moving and rotate, and it changes the assignment for every player on the court because one guy goes from being, you know, know, one pass away to being three passes away or whatever. So tonight I thought Denver just, perhaps it was because they were running such a free-flowing offense, there was a lot of possessions where you started with an initial cut, that initial shortcut, and then it just got everything moving. And I just like when they do that. There was two times in particular I can think of, but it felt like there were multiple times where a cut of that nature found its way into the offense and opened something up for somebody else. So I really like that. Jamal Murray, for coming in sort of with his tail between his legs because he got, you know, wasn't in the starting lineup and was late to shoot around. By the way, this is the second time. This happened last year where he violated a team rule. I don't know if he was late to a shoot around or practice, but last year he had to come off of the bench for one game because of that exact same thing. So kind of noteworthy, I would say. He's 21. You know, I've been late to plenty of things in my life. I'm not exactly the most punctual guy on earth, so who am I to certain to cast stones? But it is kind of noteworthy that nobody else has at least publicly been found out to have been late or missed a practice or anything, and now Jamal has in each of the last 2 years. So just file that away. Don't really read anything into it, but just sort of file that away. But he came off the bench tonight. And whether it was because the Nuggets had gotten off to such a hot start, or maybe because he just wanted to prove something or kind of earn back everybody's trust, I thought he came out very focused and he hit some good shots. Enough that makes you wonder if he is maybe more natural as a sixth man. We're going to talk about that in the next segment. Juancho Hernangómez had himself a night, season-high 25 points for him. He had 4 offensive rebounds in this game. He is a really good offensive rebounder. He just has a nose. He has a way of offensive rebounding that, you know, he just seems to know where the ball is going to be. He does it without compromising transition defense too often. He's usually very good about that. But he grabbed 4 offensive rebounds that turned into 8 points. He scored on all of his offensive rebounds, which means they weren't just like empty or, you know, whatever. It's just him kind of seeing an opportunity, going after it, and turning it into something. He also knocked down 2 of 5 three-pointers, which is good. And then he got to the line. So 9 rebounds total, 1 assist, 1 steal, 25 points. And then the best part, he was a plus 46. 46. That's insane. When he was on the court, he outscored the Atlanta Hawks by 46 points. He also played 31 minutes, which is great to see. This is a success story. This is, you know, there's so many different reasons to like sports and like basketball. And I think for Juancho, it's cool to have seen it sucks what he went through last year with getting mono and then missing all the year. And coming into this year, you guys that listen to the show regularly know, I did not think he was going to get an opportunity. I had just heard rumblings. I thought maybe he wasn't going to be in the rotation. Will Barton's injury has sort of helped him to get an opportunity. So, you know, you always stay ready because there's always injuries throughout the course of a season. But he's a guy that got an opportunity and has really, really, really looked good, in my opinion, especially with that starting lineup. And it's one of those things where I think he's such a good player alongside Nikola Jokic. You want to get more opportunities for that. Even when guys are healthy, maybe Malone has something he could file away for, okay, we're going to make sure the rotation is such that Juancho is on the court with Gary Harris and Nikola Jokic quite frequently. Monte Morris and Nikola Jokic had a couple of plays with really nice two-man game. What I like about both of those players is they're just so patient. You always hear people talk about Jokic plays at his pace and there's nothing you can do to speed him up. And I think that's true. Like, he just, a lot of guys will try to like lean on him or try to go for steals or this or that. He's just always in control, and he's not going to like, you're not going to trick him into doing something dumb and going too fast. Well, Monte Morris is the same way. And they had a couple plays where it was just, they have a two-man game. They kind of see that they're getting little advantage with each pass or each pick and roll, and they just kind of run it 2, 3, 4 times in a row until they get the look that they want. They had a couple of those, and it was really cool to see. Paul Millsap, up to almost, I think, 40% three-point shooting on the year. Is that right? He has, or maybe it's just over the last couple games or something, but Millsap, his shot is really starting to fall a lot better from outside, and thank God, because that is a huge part. Yeah, so he's at 40% on 2.3 attempts per game. So he, after a bit of a slow start, he's really picked it up. And who knows if this is for real, but if it is, this is huge for the Denver Nuggets because they need his spacing in that first unit. That first unit is so good because it's so great defensively and it's well-rounded on offense. But if it can become great on offense and they can operate with a lot of space, then I think this team goes to a whole other level. And so the Nuggets, that third quarter, they was just an absolute onslaught. It was a beautiful quarter for Denver. They put them away handily. 36-16, they outscored them in that third quarter to take just a commanding lead that they never had to look back on. They had a season-high 34 assists in this game, and I don't think it's a coincidence. First of all, they played Atlanta, sure, whatever. But I think there's two games where Denver's ball movement, they just looked the most like the Nuggets we expect. The ball was popping, so to speak. And that was the Utah game and this game against Atlanta. And they had 32 assists in the Utah game, 34 assists tonight. This is who the Denver Nuggets are at their core, at their best. If they can somehow find a way to maintain the defense that they've had through that first 10 games, and by the way, tonight's defense, they hold them to 93 points. That's pretty good. Their defense was on point as well. But if they can manage a way to maintain that defense and get back to their best version of their offense like they did tonight, this is a great team. I mean, they go right back into that conversation we were having early in the year when we thought, are they the second best team in the Western Conference? Is there anybody that's clearly better than them? And when they play like they did tonight, I think the answer is no. The answer is yes, they are, you know, as good as anybody else in the West outside of the Warriors. So, fun game, an important game to sort of get the monkey off the back for the Nuggets. And they did it in a way that I think is very encouraging as they head out to this three-game road trip. Now I want to talk in this last segment here a little bit about just what can the Nuggets learn from tonight's game and sort of, you know, even before tonight's game, I think there was a lot of talk about just, you know, how Jamal Murray has really struggled with the point guard aspect of this season. And we've talked about it on the show. I think Will Barton disguises some of those things because he's such a good secondary ball handler and playmaker. Even last year, Wilson Chandler could alleviate some of the pressure for Jamal Murray and help initiate the offense. This year, when Barton went down, you know, it became a little bit more difficult. And, you know, so some people started questioning, is Jamal Murray more of a sixth man? Is he not a point guard? Now, let me just say that, first of all, this is a moot point. The Denver Nuggets are heavily invested in Jamal Murray. They want him to be not just the point guard of the future, but I think they want him to be one of the cornerstone pieces of this Denver Nuggets team. Not as a sixth man, but as like one of the main pieces, one of like a starter, maybe even a big member of the big three. I think they look at least currently going not right now. I think your big three is Gary Harris, Nikola Jokic, and Paul Millsap. But going forward, I think they expect Jamal Murray to be that guy, to be one of those three guys as well. So I they're invested in him. That being said, at this very moment, I think he certainly has more of a skill set to be a sixth man. I think it's funny that Kevin Durant was talking, I think he was on the Bill Simmons podcast and talking about the Denver Nuggets one time, and he mentioned Jamal Murray reminds him a lot of Lou Williams. Well, Lou Williams is a sixth man. He comes off the bench. He's a scorer. His eyes are on the basket at all times, and that's when he's at his best. I think right now at this stage of his career, Jamal Murray is best when he is thinking about scoring. I don't think he has a great basketball point guard feel. Like he doesn't know how to get guys the ball in the right spot. He's not a great passer. He telegraphs a lot of passes. His handle's not as tight as it should be to be able to run point. He's got a lot of holes in his game there, and I know he wants to be a point guard. I know he likes playing that position, but in my opinion, he has a lot of work to put in the offseason, even in during the season, but especially during the offseason to get himself ready. I was a little disappointed, you know, seeing him this year because it doesn't appear that he has worked on that those parts of his games. I'm sure he's improved in other aspects, but I think just in the point guarding aspect of it, I think he has a long way to go. I hope he finds the right trainers over this next summer or even next couple of summers to really hone some of those skills. But at the very moment, I think he's best when he's focused on scoring. That's why he has been at his best this year. Obviously, the 48-point game, he just said screw it and started shooting every time and making it every time. It was a fun game. But he has been at his best in short stints alongside Mason Plumlee and Monte Morris and running the second unit where he's option number one. You know, in the starting lineup, Nikola Jokic should be option number one. I think Gary Harris should be option number two. And then you could say him and Paul Mills, everybody else is sort of tied for option number three. Well, in the second unit, when he goes out there with Trey Lyles, Wancho, or Beasley, Mason Plumlee, Jamal Murray is often option number one. And he gets to sort of be a little bit more aggressive, and I think that's where he is at his best. I think a lot of times in this, Malone talking about trust, I think part of what's difficult about that is it's easy to trust Monte Morris because he doesn't turn the ball over. He has the best assist to turnover ratio in all of the NBA. If you can't trust him, then you can't trust anybody. So I think it's easy for Malone to trust Monte Morris to run a free-flowing offense, and maybe not as easy for him to trust Jamal Murray. So part of it is, I think right now you could make a case that the Nuggets would be better in the short term, and I mean very short term, if they were just to start Monte Morris and bring Jamal Murray off of the bench. But they're not going to do that, and I don't know that they necessarily should do that. It does go to show you, in my opinion, or at least it provides a little bit more evidence to this point that I've sort of made for 2 years now, which is that Nikola Jokic is better than we think in a lot of ways. I mean, he's moody. Like, throw out the non-basketball related stuff, but just on the court talent wise, if you gave him a Chris Paul or just a point guard that was great at getting people, a true point guard, great at getting him in his spots, but who was also a threat, I think he would absolutely dominate. Some people ask me sometimes, like, well, how would he look alongside LeBron James? And I think, are you kidding? He would look incredible, because LeBron knows how to get the ball to people in their spots, and he's so good at attacking people that, you know, off of the dribble or in the pick and roll, that defense would have to overreact. Well, we saw tonight with Monte Morris, you know, Jokic just seemed like his best self tonight. I mean, this was the best. That 35-point triple-double was impressive. This game was every bit, you know, just in terms of looking like Nikola Jokic in his bag, in his game, in his comfort zone that we have seen. So I think there is something to it. Now, here's the thing. They're not going to change the starting lineup. Against New Orleans, Jamal Murray will go back. I think a couple things are big takeaways here. If I'm Michael Malone, the first is, through hell or high water, he has got to trust this team. There's enough great players that if he gives that trust and they burn him with it, then he can make adjustments either to starting lineup or to minutes or whatever. But he needs to be able to trust them, because they are so clearly at their best when they're playing free-flowing. They're unpredictable, and that's what makes them so good. When they're deliberate, they're just not that good. You take something out of them when you call too many plays. So that's number one. You know, I think Malone is in on this. There's reasons he's always slow to do this at the start of years, but I hope that the team is over that now. The second thing you take away, I would look for more minutes with Jamal Murray on the second unit. Even if he's starting, I would just try to stagger rotations in a way that would provide him an opportunity to play more minutes with the second unit. And I would try to find more minutes with the lineup that started tonight, or lineups that feature Jokic, Monte Murray, and three shooters. Preferably Gary Harris in there as well. I mean, I think, to me, a foursome that I would really look for minutes for. Like, you know, you look at it, your starters are going to play the most minutes together. They start the first and the third quarter. They often finish games as well. So they're going to just naturally get a lot of minutes. But the lineup I'd like to see maybe get the second most minutes would be Monte Morris, Gary Harris, Juancho Hernangómez, Nikola Jokic. Those four guys, and you could mix and match who that fourth guy is. Sometimes it'll be Trey Lyles, maybe Malik Beasley a little bit, maybe Paul Millsap. Maybe even Jamal Murray, and you just play a three-guard lineup. But the four I just mentioned, Juancho, Gary Harris, Monte Morris, Nikola Jokic, I would try to find minutes for those guys, because to me, Jokic ball is a point guard that knows how to get the ball where it's supposed to be. Nikola Jokic has the focal point and three great cutters and shooters around him. You give him that, and I think they're just going to run so many teams off the court. And you think about it, second units don't always have lineup. They're not always lineups that can kill you, like, oh, this one guy's just going to absolutely murder you. So I think Denver can get away with 3-4-5 minute stretches with that lineup against second units that just kills, that just absolutely owns a lot of teams and runs them off of the court. So those are the big takeaways I would have. A lot of people saying Monte should be the starter. It's not going to happen. Whatever you think, I don't even think it's worth, you know, spending too much time on. I just don't think it's going to happen. But it should be encouraging that they have these lineups they can go to staggered behind the starting lineup. So that's what I'm encouraged by. Denver gets a big win. They needed it. Now a big test on the road at New Orleans. We'll see how they handle this three-game road trip. They've got New Orleans, Milwaukee, and Minnesota, three playoff-caliber teams in the Western Conference. Very tough road trip, but at least they get it started off on the right foot with this final win at home before heading out there. Thanks so much for tuning in, everybody. We'll be back again next week with brand new episodes.
Thank you for listening to the Locked on Nuggets podcast. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes and visit us on the web at denverstiffs.com.